Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon? A show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is June 29, 2010, and you're listening to show number 40 of Who's Reading the Organon. We'll be reading aphorism number 6 and continuing on with the footnote. It seems like it might be an in-depth reading today. I don't know. Is Vera there?
Yep, I'm here. In-depth reading every day, Debbie.
Good to see you today, Vera. We're going to be, I'm going to start with something a little bit interesting, usual inspirations and motivations. I thought number 40 was a very important number, so I thought I'd find out some facts about number 40, and it came up that there is a French homeopathic doctor and psychoanalyst named René Allendy, who is one of the founding members of the Society Psychoanalytica de Paris, and he practiced medicine, homeopathy, and psychoanalysis. He studied also esotericism and numerology, and he published extensively in these fields. According to René Allendy, I quote, "It is the achievement of a cycle in the world, or rather the rhythm of the cyclic repetitions in the universe," and that was a referral to number 40. In addition, number 40 is the number that is often read in the Bible and can be seen as a cyclical period of waiting, receiving, and achievement. There's an Arabic proverb that says, quote, "To understand a people, you must live among them for 40 days," unquote. 40 is also the number of weeks for an average term of pregnancy. There we have a lot of waiting until the end. And if you're pregnant now in the heat of this ultra-hot summer, I know it's really difficult. The Israelites also spent 40 years wandering in the wilderness before reaching the promised land. And very interesting, the atomic number for 40 is zirconium. That's a really nice thing to have on your finger. And there is an expression that says 40 winks means a short sleep. So I'm hoping that all the sleepers awake now as we continue our study of the Organon toward a greater understanding of Hahnemann and his achievements in the world and our achievements for learning the art of medicine. A little bit of news on the home front, HWC. There was a protest in Brighton Center this morning at 9 a.m., and I'm waiting to hear some news from someone about what exactly happened during that occasion. I put up a discussion in the forum with news from the media, and I'd like to hear some action and comments there. Also, I want to thank Dr. Prasad Arvind Rasal for posting his cured cases, which have been very thorough with photographs and explanation referring back to the Organon. Thank you so much. Take a look at those. And lastly, I'm encouraging everyone to go into the tutorial section of HWC. You're going to have a much smoother ride and transition into the website if you know how to use it and use the new policy for categorizing your blogs and discussions. I'm ready to go into the Organon. think it's
okay. So
okay.
Even though we read the aphorism itself, number 6, we read it yesterday. I think it's a good idea just to go over it once more, the aphorism, and then delve into the footnotes. So would you like to read it, Debbie?
Okay. Aphorism number 6, the unprejudiced observer, well aware of the futility of transcendental speculations, which can receive no confirmation from experience, be his powers of penetration ever so great, takes note of nothing in every individual disease except the changes in the health of the body and of the mind, in parentheses called morbid phenomena, accidents, and symptoms, which can be perceived externally by means of the senses. That is to say, he notices only the deviations from the former healthy state of the now diseased individual, which are felt by the patient himself, remarked by those around him, and observed by the physician. All these perceptible signs represent the disease in its whole extent, that is, together they form the true and only conceivable portrait of the disease.
Okay, so here we emphasized yesterday how it's important to notice only the deviations from the former healthy state. And if we have special people skills and understanding skills, we should in a way put those on one side to make sure we are not speculating, make sure we're working based on the patient's report. And here we've got 3 sources. The deviations which are felt by the patient himself, remarked by those around him, and observed by the physician. Debbie, have I mentioned anything about organ on trios?
No, I don't recall.
It's an exercise that I do sometimes with students. Hahnemann is a very structured writer, and very often he uses trios. He uses it's a classical form of writing where you present 3 things. Here we have the deviations that are 1, felt by the patient himself, 2, remarked by those around him, 3, observed by the physician. You'll notice in aphorism 2, the highest idea of cure is 1, rapid, 2, gentle, 3, permanent restoration.
Mm-hmm.
We see this very often, and sometimes, because I think that when you treat a text like a treasure hunt, I'll suggest to people that they look for these trios. They look through the aphorisms for the trios. And it's very useful. It's a game more than anything else, you know, following Hahnemann's writing structure. But it can be a useful way.
Boy, you're picking up on the theme today of numerology and numbers.
Apparently.
And yes, and we know that there is such a thing called a 3-legged stool. A chair cannot stand on 2 legs alone. Maybe today there's some kind of ingenious person who could create something of that nature, but typically you need 3 points in order to stand up and have a solid base, just like the triangle is the strongest, most solid figure there is, supportively. So that really sounds like a fun game to look for all those trios. I would call it a triad for some reason. I'm not used to the word trio. I think that's very musical.
I just want to see. I think that that in previous study I found around 26 of them in aphorisms.
Wow.
170.
Oh boy, put those up.
It's up on my Materia Medica study methods blog, which is where the Organon blog is. I have a category named very inventively Stuff, and inside Stuff there's Organon trios. Yes. Yes,
well,
I found 26 in aphorisms 1 to 70. So I challenge anyone who's listening to this or who downloads this, see if you can find 26 trios in aphorisms 1 to 70.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's move to the footnote.
Okay.
I know not, therefore, how it was possible for physicians at the sickbed to allow themselves to suppose that, without most carefully attending to the symptoms and being guided by them in the treatment, they ought to seek and could discover only in the hidden and unknown interior what there was to be cured in the disease, arrogantly and ludicrously pretending that they could, without paying much attention to the symptoms, discover the alteration that had occurred in the invisible interior and set it to rights with unknown medicines, and that such a procedure as this could alone be called radical and rational treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Is not then that which is cognizable by the senses in diseases through the phenomena it displays, the disease itself in the eyes of the physician, since he never can see the spiritual being that produces the disease, the vital force? Nor is it necessary that he should see it, but only that he should ascertain its morbid actions, in order that he may thereby be enabled to cure the disease. What else would the old school search for in the hidden interior of the organism as a prima causa morbi, a prime cause of disease, whilst they reject as an object of cure and contemptuously despise the sensible and manifest representation of the disease, the symptoms that so plainly address themselves to us? What else do they wish to cure in diseases but these?
Boy, he's getting very upset with the medical society of his day, who are looking to find some kind of a germ as a cause, as opposed to using what he sees plainly in front of his face or what the patient is speaking to him directly from their experience. So he's really very poignant about this. The first part of that, may I continue?
Sure, go ahead.
The first part of that footnote, he seems to be referring back to that comment he said about transcendental speculations.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that those things are relating to spirit or the non-physical realm. And he goes on with the footnote to explain this is not what we can actually perceive in our material world, but in the way that we do is through the symptoms, that triad that you gave us previously.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting that is only a form of theory and conjecture about a subject without firm evidence. And it seems to me that the organon and homeopathy is based upon firm evidence. And therefore, today, the whole controversy is all about providing evidence and providing data and scientific evidence. It seems the organon and Hahnemann and the homeopath today are the ones who are providing that. So they're kind of doing like a switch the tables on us.
Mm-hmm. But I think also it's something that we ourselves as homeopaths need to be able to focus on. There's a lot of debate about whether we are curing the whole person or whether we're curing the disease. And I think that very often we need to look, does the whole person need curing? If a person is by nature impatient, do we need to cure that? It's part of the whole person.
Mm-hmm.
We need to cure a diseased response to that personality. That, yes, but we don't need to cure his impatience per se. Hahnemann is really showing us here in Aphorism 6 and in the footnote that the disease speaks to us. The disease speaks to us using the language of symptoms. Either we listen or we speculate about what's behind, what's beneath, what's even to some extent what's the cause. Like when we do a timeline with a patient and we find out that everything began around the same time as a boyfriend left her, and she was very upset. And this was 16 years ago, and she's never forgotten it, and she's never been well since. So on the one hand, yes, we could go to Natura Muriaticum, we could go in that direction, we could say, well, there's very clear causation, there's this grief, and she still pines for this boyfriend of 15 years ago, who is now probably a grandfather. But what if her symptoms today have nothing to do with Natura Muriaticum? What if her disease today is speaking to us in a different language of symptoms, not the language of Natura Muriaticum? Hahnemann is saying, pay attention to that. Don't just think in terms of, yes, maybe you're right. There's a very strong causation. The patient said it. We understand it. We see, although there were various other things that happened along the way during the homeopathic interview, the patient stressed this whole thing of this 15-year-old boyfriend. I mean, 15-year-old loss.
Loss. Mm-hmm.
But
so you're emphasizing that. I'm sorry.
I'm emphasizing that we need to look. Yeah, we need to look at the symptoms presenting in front of us now.
Mm-hmm.
And
no conjecture.
No conjecture, but also not to get confused in the timeline. The first mm-hmm. thing we need to look at is what's going on now. Then we can decide what else we're going to include in our timeline. We're going to try and see, well, before that and before that, and that might give us a direction as to what remedies we'll need next. But we need to treat the now. We need to treat the chief complaint now. And I think that's one of the things, personally, I've always found most confusing in case taking. Yes, we mm-hmm. take a full case, we find out all kinds of information, but what is to be cured? And that mm-hmm. is the question that everything hinges around. The remedies that we give depend on that question, on how we answer that question. And Hahnemann
so
is saying... Hahnemann is saying...
Do we need to emphasize then what we are observing at the present time?
Absolutely, especially if it's a deviation from health.
Mm-hmm.
Hahnemann says he notices only the deviation from the former healthy state. So if we see that someone is very cheerful and you ask him, were you always this way? He says, no, just the last few weeks while I've had this horrible rash, I seem to be very cheerful. Okay, deviation from health. Doesn't mm-hmm. sound like it, but for this particular patient, it could well be deviation from health. If
it's
someone
very
says,
interesting.
Yeah, carry on.
It's
carry
very
on.
Interesting, Vera, because you give such great examples each time for these points of information. And you spoke about this person who had impatience and that might not need to be something that's cured or needs to be cured. But when I think of someone who is impatient, I think of him as a reflection of an inner disease that, you know, maybe there's something going on with his heart or with his nervous system that is deranged, and that's the cause of this impatience. But you're saying that it's just his nature. This is a little bit confusing for me because when I think of a healthy person, I think of them as being able to cope really well and being more even-tempered.
Whereas I think that is part of a problem in our society. There's some science fiction writers who relate to it. Maybe anyone out there who reads science fiction will be familiar with that. People are different. Some people are impatient, some people are hot-headed, some people are excessively patient, and some people are natural doormats. It's the nature of a person is not necessarily pathological. It's what they do with that nature. If someone is impatient, and as a result of that, they develop high blood pressure, they develop eating problems, they develop various other diseases, then it's possible that by treating the diseases that they're developing, something in their impatience may be tempered. But I wouldn't expect to get rid of that impatience. And the other thing also, I think we forget sometimes in our universal desire for peace and harmony, that impatience has driven people. Impatience, bad temperedness, antisocial tendencies have often driven people to works of genius.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
To writings of genius. And by trying to even out temperament, or by thinking that we can, which actually, sadly, using allopathic drugs, we can even out temperament. We can reduce people who are very talented into a bland mush of lack of personality.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if going back from nature to nurture, you know, in what you're born with, which is what your moves you forward in your journey of life through your given nature and what you do with it. It's always how you deal with what you have, which is either in a healthy manner or a deranged manner.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're producing these organic changes, illnesses, then we know there's something that needs to be tempered in some way.
Mm-hmm. But very often what we're tempering is not the nature. We're tempering the body's response to that nature. We may land up still with someone who's impatient, but possibly he'll structure his life in such a way that his impatience won't impact on him quite so much. It boils down, I think, Debbie, to this whole question of what needs to be cured. If someone comes, let's say, given another example, someone comes and she does everything for her family. And she knows that she is excessively in her family's life, that she doesn't have that much of a life of her own. On the whole, she's happy with it. It's a choice that's consciously made, but she has some pathology. So are we going to treat her for being too accessible to her family? I don't really think so. I think that we'll treat the pathology. That's where our what is to be cured, the deviation from health. Maybe she's always been a people pleaser. This happens so often with women. Maybe she's always been a people pleaser. We treat the pathology, and then we see what happens. Maybe something in her nature will change a little, maybe not. Maybe she'll start putting up borders where something in her feels, I don't really want to do this anymore. Maybe not. But I don't see how we can specify that that's something to be cured because it's not speaking to us in its own symptom. When we see the language of symptoms from the body, that will tell us whether, through the course of treatment, whether that other thing needed to be cured or not.
Really fascinating. And I think this speaks very much of individualization.
Each of us
are unique beings. We have something to do on Earth, and our nature is part of that. Our dynamic, how we relate to others, how we relate to our environment, how we relate to what's been given to us at birth. Fascinating.
I think also if you take the example of the people pleasers, because it's something I think all of us see in the clinic, we see in our general lives, we see in people around us. There are some people who make a conscious decision, this is the way they're going to run their lives, and it's going to be mainly for other people. Then there are other people who sort of make that decision but feel hugely resentful. And they can't acknowledge that in themselves, they have a hard time, they go to various therapists, and they can't bring it out. Now, chances are, in the first example, we'll give a remedy for the symptoms that are presenting, whatever they are, but the people pleasing won't change because there wasn't really anything to cure. It was a conscious decision. But chances are in the second example where there's a whole deep well of resentment and this person doesn't want to be people pleasing. This person wants to go trekking around the world and dump her entire family in wherever. It's possible that we'll start seeing changes there after giving a remedy, not based on that at all as a symptom, but based on the presenting symptoms.
Thank you so much.
It is a fascinating subject. I think we see it more as we go along with patients and we learn from them and we learn through their processes.
I wanted to read a little bit from The Guide to Homeopathic Medicine and Philosophy by D.D. Banerjee. Because he states that the prima causa morbi is the maintaining cause. And in the way that you were just discussing this type of personality complex, is it the person's maintaining cause that what is holding the person back from being more free to go and do what he wants rather than please another person? So in this writings of Dr. Banerjee, he says, some philosophers had thought of germs as the prima causa morbi because they believed in the germs as miasms, maintaining cause. Is maintaining cause is that which helps to maintain the diseases. A man suffering from severe spasmodic cough is diagnosed as smoker throat. In spite of warning, he continues smoking, and this cigar smoking is the maintaining cause. Occasionally, he says, an exciting cause may become a maintaining cause. That's kind of like the etiology that something happens in a person's life. A child is severely traumatized and goes in a state of stramonium, and then throughout their life, they're growing up and feeling this trauma and shock and fear with them, and it becomes a maintaining cause. And also he says exactly what you said earlier, that the symptom in the external manifestations of the internally deranged vital force, it is an evidence of manifestation of a disease, a change from a state of health, commonly classified into two groups. A, he calls it the subjective symptoms narrated by the patient, and this is only discovered by the patient. He or she is the only one who can actually speak this information. And then B, the objective, which is observed by the physician and those around him, which he calls the attendants. So that's kind of a twofold thing, the inner and the outer. And so we have our triads, our number 40, and our duos, duos, two things. Mm-hmm. So number seems to be our thing today. Is there anything else regarding aphorism number 6 and the footnotes that we need to discuss?
I think also one of the things that he doesn't say it here, he says it further on, I think Hanuman is very specific that by hidden interior, he's not talking about something metaphysical. So that's something we'll discuss a little bit later when Hanuman himself mentions it. And even though all the analyses are very good, I'd recommend that we just stick with the straightforward reading of aphorism 6, which is we are looking for deviation from the former healthy state. Here Hanuman is not talking about specifically about maintaining cause. I don't quite understand how prima causa is maintaining cause, because prima literally means first cause, which is initial trigger. But perhaps someone can enlighten me on that. And I think that's about it for aphorism 6. I think it's a wrap. We are looking for changes. And as a result of aphorism 6, I've started noting in my own case taking, in the right hand column, I do my case taking in three columns, a left hand with the name of the system, a center column with the details. And now in the right column, I note, is this a change? Is it an old chronic? And it's very interesting because it helps focus the analysis. Anyway, I see we only have 1 minute left.
Right. Okay. So you're using three columns, the trios.
It's fairly standard.
For your analysis and your visualization of what's happening in the case. Okay. So, all right. Closing up for aphorism number 6 today.
Bring the changes.
Repeat that?
Bring the changes.
Ring the changes. Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Vera.
Thanks very much, Debbie.
Continuing our discussions on Hahnemann's Organon. Take your book off the shelf and read it. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? With homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.